Welcome to the Two Daft Yanks Podcast, the show that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelain.
This is the Two Daft Yanks Podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith, and I am broadcasting from the brand new, newly built Two Daft Yanks Mile High Studios. With a crowd of fit soccer players who like to go to the mountains on the weekends. And I am joined, as always, in the Two Daft Yanks Polar Studios by Corey Chatelain.
Warning U.S. soccer fans, listening to Two Daft Yanks may cause affinity for European soccer, bouts of communist behavior, and other unseemly American activities. Listen at your own risk and at the risk of being rounded up by MLS authorities. Hey, how's it everybody going, man? Everybody like that pathetic display of Garber dictatorship today?
Oh, my. We will get to that, folks.
Dictatorship, I guess.
Yes, so thank you for sticking around for us. If you're listening, we took a week off of the international break, and I have recently relocated to build these new Mile High Two Daft Yanks studios. So we are here and back and ready to pod and happy that you're listening. And here's the rundown for this week. As Corey said, a topic one is going to be it just fell into our laps today. Garber versus Klinsmann. Round is this? Round two or three, really?
Yeah, it's definitely going up there with the Thrillers and Manilas.
It's going to be like Rocky. We're going to get up to like Rocky V. Second, we were going to talk about some of the results we've seen in the European qualifiers, and then we're going to talk a little about the format. And then third, since we're doing this midweek for a change, we will preview some of this weekend's Premier League action. So that is what is on the docket. And as Corey said, listen at your own risk or be rounded up by
the MLS.
Garbatron.
Yes. The MLS police.
MLS single entity dictatorship police.
Hail the Garbatron. Hail.
All right. Well, we were going to talk about, important matters that actually matter, but no, we got sidetracked by this and we have to talk about it and everybody's going to talk about it. But we, the Two Daft Yanks, are not going to, go into this. Oh, well, I've seen this, a lot of people being diplomatic. Oh, well, what Garber said has a kernel of truth, and what Klinsmann said had a kernel of truth, and we all just need to get along, folks, for the betterment of U.S. soccer. No. The answer is no, we don't. We don't have to get along.
Yeah, let the revolution begin.
The revolution will not be televised because it's on an MLS contract and nobody watches.
Yes. But hopefully one day it takes place at a corner kick or something. So,
let me just run through some of these quotes here. And these are courtesy. The man on the spot was the @SoccerInsider, the Stephen Goff, who writes for the Washington Post. He was on the ball today. He has all the quotes. And I'm just going to go through his Twitter feed, Corey, and I'll read some of the big ones.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, he was the main one I was following, so.
Okay. So he started off, Garber is about to conduct a media call at 4 p.m. to address Klinsmann's comments. Maybe he'll fine him $20,000 too. And that's in reference to, Bruce Arena getting fined by the MLS when the MLS basically stopped them from signing a player for no apparent reason. Garber said, I will do everything and anything to defend our league and players. I feel very strongly Jurgen's comments are very, very, not just one very, but two verys, detrimental to the league and to the sport of soccer, which is interesting.
Yes.
Because some people would argue that MLS is not soccer. Now, I'm not one of those people, but there are people who would say that. Garber continues, sending a negative message to any player that signing with MLS is not good for their career or form is incredibly detrimental to U.S. soccer. Garber went to say that Klinsmann's comments are incredibly damaging to the league. He's infuriated.
Blah, 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 blah.
He's personally infuriated, yes. And then he went on record as saying that Landon Donovan should have been taken to Brazil based on his form. Apparently, I didn't know that Garber was at training every day. So that's something that we didn't know.
Yes. Yeah.
It's absolutely unacceptable for Klinsmann to criticize players in the media.
Which is ridiculous since he's a coach. And he can. And did, so.
And then this is the most infuriating comment for us. So if you're infuriated, Garbertron, we're infuriated by this. I am demanding that Klinsmann refrain from making comments which are critical of our players and damaging to our league. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, how dare you criticize players that you may be coaching and may be coaching in the future and, you know, exercising your First Amendment rights. Screw you, German boy! I mean, how pathetic is that?
Yeah, no, you're not even American. You don't have freedom of speech, right?
Yeah, oh, man, this guy. Who is this guy? What does this German know? You know, he only played, you know, 15 years at the top level, winning the World Cup, you know, playing for a country that's been a soccer power for over a century. What the hell does this guy know?
Okay, so before we go on, let me make this abundantly clear to people, and I'll get your comments, Corey. So this is what you need to know about this Garber versus Klinsmann. Is A, Klinsmann works for U.S. Soccer, which is not MLS. Klinsmann's goal is to put together the best players he can for the USA to do the best they can in international competition. Would we agree on that?
Yes.
Okay. Garber, as commissioner of the MLS, works on behalf of the MLS and its owners. Now, the goal of the MLS, is clear, is to make money for the owners. So he says that, well, we need to work, Klinsmann needs to work with MLS in order to advance U.S. soccer. Trust me, MLS has no interest in advancing U.S. soccer outside of the financial implications that the success of the U.S. men's national team may have to his league.
Exactly, because if it's about promoting U.S. soccer, why do they have such a antagonistic stance to all the other leagues in this country?
Yes, or if they're – exactly. Then why do they hate the NASL? Why did they buy up some of the lower leagues, basically making them throwaway minor leagues or developmental teams? I had another point. What did you just say?
Well, just how the MLS, like they normally do, they want to promote the idea that they're promoting U.S. soccer when, in fact, like I said, they often go out of their way to only promote MLS or to promote MLS as U.S. soccer the only outlet of U.S. soccer in this country, which is, you know, absolutely false because you have several other leagues. You have, you know, amateur clubs with long histories that go back into, you know, to the teens, which the MLS, you know, would rather, create a New York team out of thin air or something when you have, you know, numerous other amateur clubs that, like I said, that actually predate the NFL.
Yes.
But, those aren't that's not real U.S. soccer because it's not MLS anymore, you know?
Or as we talked about, even to this day, the number one club in terms of a worldwide name and brand recognition in this country is the New York Cosmos, which MLS won't touch with a 20-foot stick.
Right. Like I said, they would rather create a club out of thin air using, you know, the UAE and the Man City marketing.
Okay. So know that Garber works on behalf of the owners, and the owners are only interested in making money. They could do many, many things to advance U.S. soccer as a whole, but the league doesn't allow that to do that. I mean, you know, the players don't even get a really choice to where they even want to play. And every other sport has been through this, you know, in the 70s and the 80s with the whole free agency, baseball, the whole Curt Flood thing. But in soccer in the U.S., you don't really have a say. Just look at this season with Jermaine Jones, who wanted to play for Chicago, but he couldn't. MLS blocked it. So there you go.
Yeah, and then, of course, all the shenanigans that went on with Dempsey when Portland was – you know, lined up to sign him, and all of a sudden MLS stepped in and, you know, a week later he was going to Seattle all of a sudden.
Portland didn't want to sign him, but they did own the number one pick, and they wanted to be able to trade his rights and get compensation because they did have the number one.
Okay, slot. Well, yeah, that's what I meant. I mean, they were in position to sign him if they wanted.
Yes, but weren't given the opportunity.
Correct, just meaning that basically the rights, which under single entity seem to, you know, like most totalitarian systems, only exist as long as the whims of the, you know, the head guy dictate and can change at any point. So, you know.
Okay, and now I'm going to get into Klinsmann here in a second, but let's continue on this Garber front. Now, remember,
sure.
Garber is a former NFL executive, and you know how the NFL has been under Goodell. If you say anything bad about the league, they're going to nail you.
Yes, or win a trademark lawsuit against them, and all of a sudden you might have a bounty case against you.
Yeah, that too. So, but in terms of this Garber stuff versus Klinsmann, I also want to point out that these comments are interesting to me because you did not see this, and the only other sport that I can see a parallel here to where a national team coach was criticizing the setup in his players is with USA basketball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we went through a stretch to where we were getting our butts kicked by Spain and, you know, some of these Eastern European countries. And who did they bring in to take over the program to kind of meld it all together, to work with, you know, kids at a young age, clear up to the senior team? And that was the Phoenix Suns guy, Jerry Colangelo, that's his name, yeah, Jerry Colangelo, who brought in Mike Krzyzewski, Coach K from Duke. Mm-hmm. And him and Klinsmann are very similar to where they expect their players to, you know, play at a high level at all around. You know, you just can't be a specialist shooting threes. He wants you to play in a team game, and that's what Klinsmann's trying to preach. And Coach K, when he first came in, said similar comments about Klinsmann, about the, you know, like Klinsmann did, about the nature of the modern NBA player being selfish, and then if you want to play for this team, you're going to have to come in, and you're going to have to check your ego at the door. But you didn't see the NBA. You didn't see David Stern fighting Coach K saying, oh, you're speaking bad about our players, did you?
Well, yeah, and I think there's even another parallel, like in U.S. hockey, when there was the debacle in Nagano, however you say
Nagano,
it, where,
yes,
where the U.S. team, you know, like you said, they basically showed up, hey, we're at the Olympics, we're just going to have a good time, and, you know, end up trashing a hotel because nobody gave a crap for being there, which, you know, then led to you know, kind of a clear out in the U.S. hockey system, and then go into a, you know, more of a an actual soccer, you know, national team style, where instead of picking basically an all-star team, you bring kids in young, and, you know, you basically groom them and swap them in and out more like a consistent national team. So there's a parallel there too, I think.
Yeah, a little bit. But my thing is, I know for a fact that Coach K, you know, spoke out against the modern NBA player and their mindset.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
He wasn't fined by the NBA for, oh, you're disparaging the NBA. I mean, it's Mickey Mouse, really, what Garber did today. And,
oh, yeah, absolutely. It's
completely it's Bush pathetic. League. And what's he going to do? Is he going to issue a press conference if he hears this podcast? I mean, is he that small-minded that where he thinks that he's got to go against Klinsmann? I mean, most people who know anything are going to side with Klinsmann. As you said, it's not like, you know, let's put in one hand the accomplishments in the football world of Garber and then in the hand of Klinsmann. Well, who's going to win that battle?
Yeah, especially when, you know, as you said earlier, that Garber's basically a handpicked puppet by the NFL owners that basically use MLS as, you know, the softer version of the NFL. You know, I mean, it's not a coincidence that, you know, I mean, we talked about New York a few minutes ago, but the team that's going in or maybe going into Atlanta, you know, you have a club that's been there for a while that's pretty successful at an amateur level or semi-pro level, and then who gets a franchise or who possibly gets a franchise? Arthur Blank, you know, mainly because he's the only one because of the NFL money who can pay in to the MLS. But, you know, forget all the actual U.S. soccer culture that's been in Atlanta. You know, we're gonna handpick a guy
you know, from the NFL because, oh, by the way, most of our other owners have ties or, you know, outright ownership in NFL clubs, you know, as well. And a commissioner that, like I said, that was basically handpicked by Robert Kraft of the New England Patriots to run the damn league.
Yes, and I remember that it was a story that we all knew, but the quotes came out again, I want to say in August, to where Robert Kraft walked up to Garber and asked him, hey, do you know anything about soccer? And Garber said no. Well, Kraft said, well, you're going to because you're the new commissioner of the league. And yeah. That's how it happened. And those are dead-on accurate quotes. Nobody can say that did not happen. So they hand-selected a guy who knew nothing about soccer, and now he's sitting there telling Klinsmann what he should and shouldn't do in his job. It's a mockery.
Yeah, because again, it's the other thing that was occurring to me today is that, you know, what's Klinsmann supposed to do? Okay, well, let's pick all MLS players or whatever, you know, is the supposed goal of MLS fans and commissioners or whatever, that we're supposed to build the national team through the US League, which, you know, I've been on record many a times that's one of the falsehoods of soccer leagues, is that you don't necessarily need a strong domestic league per se. You know, Argentina, Brazil, all those countries, you know, have fairly weak domestic leagues. But anyway, just meaning that, so let's just say Klinsmann is somehow forced to pick, you know, more MLS players, and then all of a sudden he doesn't do well at a tournament. You know, what's he supposed to turn around and do? You know, I mean, he's then going to get blamed for not being a good coach. So I can understand from his point, it's like, look, if I'm going to be like any head coach, if I'm going to be on the hook for the results, I want the freaking best players, you know, I can get my hands on, and I want the best players to be in top form. And regardless of what everybody thinks in this country about the quality of MLS, it's the simple fact of the matter is, it's not one of the better leagues in the world. It's like, I don't care what the most, you know, ardent MLS bot will argue. It's not one of the best leagues in the world. Ergo, when you go to a tournament facing guys that play in much better leagues, you're going to have to, you know, to be successful, you're going to have to play that much better, which, you know, usually we don't.
Yes, because you're not used to playing at that high of a level. And that's why you should play at the best club you can. Now, you brought up a long time ago about, or we were talking a couple weeks ago about Johnny O.
Yes.
And kind of the Landon Donovan comparison.
Never remember.
Yeah. So what, would you demand that Johnny O leave Ajax to go to, you know, play for the MLS if you really cared? I mean, if it existed, I mean, come on, that's ridiculous. You should play in the best club you can. And it's disappointing. I could see where Klinsmann's disappointed that Bradley didn't fight for his place at Roma, where Dempsey left Tottenham without even – I mean, Spurs were happy to sell him, but he was still in their plans. But they got a good price for him, so they sold him. He didn't fight for his place. And that's all. You just want our players to get to the best situation they can. Why did Dempsey and Bradley fight all that way to get to these big clubs, you know, Tottenham and Roma, and then just to cash in?
And that wouldn't be as bad on its own, except you have the captain of, you know, the longtime captain of a country who once upon a time left Germany basically because it was too difficult to play over there. And now you got guys like Breck Shea, you know, with comments being quoted of, well, playing for Stoke is really hard because it's more like a 9-to-5 job over here, where in the MLS, it's, you know, there's less pressure. I mean, for professional athletes, those are absolutely pathetic things to say.
Oh, I forgot about those comments. Yes, he said that, and to be more specific, he said MLS is like playing soccer with your friends.
Yes.
Another thing he said, to where over in Europe, it's a real job. So if you don't want,
well, you're a professional athlete, Bosco. Of course it is.
You know? Well, I know, and I understand what he's saying, but don't just make it that it's, you know, Corey and I making this stuff up. If Breck Shea is saying this, then if you don't think that's true, well, then you're ignorant.
Well, yeah, because it's. Well, yeah, because, you know, you and I used to work together, and that kind of morale just eventually seeps through an entire club or an organization. When nobody else is putting in their best effort, no matter how hardworking you are, that tends to be cut. You know, you tend to drop the, you know, you might not drop down to the median, but you're not going to, you know, be at your peak as often as, you know, as you normally would in a place where you're going to be constantly challenged. And that's what's, like I said, for a professional athlete to come out and say that, it's pretty freaking pathetic. And like I said, if I was Klinsmann, I mean, people would hate me even more than Klinsmann, because if Shea would, after a comment like that, Shea would probably never see another national team roster as long as I was in charge.
No, I don't think Shea was complaining. He was just telling it how it is and explaining why he's had a tough time to adapt.
I know, but just
that's how I view it.
Okay, well, no,
I don't blame him for saying it. It's a courageous thing for him to come out and say, in my mind.
Well, and I guess that's my greater point. It's,
did Garber fine him?
Well, I don't know, because that's because wasn't Shea one of the ones
that's detrimental to the league, isn't it?
You would think, because wasn't Shea one of the ones that was supposed to leave like 3 or 4 different times and moves were killed by the MLS or something?
No, it was the first move.
Okay.
And they sold him to Stoke, which was a complete ridiculous thing to do. If Garber is this, you know, this soccer mastermind that he claims he is, and he thinks, oh, Landon Donovan deserved to be, well, he should know that selling one of your brightest, youngest, most promising attacking players to Stoke under Tony Pulis was one of the dumbest things the league could do.
Yeah, a wide attacking player with a guy who didn't use wingers. You know,
yeah, good job there, Garbertron.
Hey, but what do we know? We're just two knuckleheads, you know, with microphones.
With a podcast who talks, and, you know, people love us.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening. Now, let's get to Klinsmann here really quick, and then we'll wrap this up. So we're talking. This has been a great conversation. But, you know, Klinsmann's comments, he hasn't changed his tune pre-World Cup, during World Cup, post-World Cup. And I think the reason there's this uproar and people defending Garber and going after Klinsmann is because Klinsmann's comments still go back to the World Cup. And he knows that we didn't play to the best of our abilities. Now, some of that does fall on him because he didn't get the players to do what they wanted to do. But as we've said in the past, Corey, at this point in time in the stage of U.S. soccer, the players who are on the senior team, they're already, I'll put this in quotes, they're already ruined to where they are what they are. You're not going to be able to, you know, meld them very much into how you want them to be just because they've been set in their ways. So the problem is the MLS, who, you know, was sending out tweets every time an MLS player scored a goal. Oh, MLS scores a goal in the World Cup. Remember that ridiculousness?
Tim Cahill. Oh, yeah, yeah, he's a real MLS guy.
Yeah, it's an MLS product. And then the media, and so the MLS and the media was hyping up the U.S. team, especially in that Belgium match, saying, oh, we were so courageous and we did so well. Well, no, well, we got outshot like 40-2. I mean, you shouldn't give up that many shots, and Klinsmann knows that's unacceptable. So the media thinks that we did great. The general public thinks that we did great, but we didn't do – a great team doesn't give up that many shots. As we talked about this, you know, in the aftermath of that match. So Klinsmann just wants his players to get into – I just don't understand it. One more thing to go back into an NBA comparison. Where do the best basketball players in Europe go to? Do they stick around in the European League, or do they come to America?
They all stay in their little community college leagues, don't they?
Yeah, see, do you hear people in Europe saying, oh, no, you got to support European basketball? No. They go to the USA to challenge themselves on the highest level. Doesn't mean you'll succeed, but a lot of them have. A lot of the star players in the league today are European. A lot of them are.
Yeah, same thing with hockey.
And hockey, too, exactly. Do you think, I mean, there's some pretty, I mean, the Russian league is pretty good, and there's leagues in Germany and the Swiss league, but they're terrible. But they come to the United States to play at the highest level. Nowhere in basketball in Europe or in hockey in Europe would you hear people saying, oh, you got to stay. You got to support your local league. I mean, support your local league, but don't expect your best players to stay there because it's good for the game. We got to grow the game. You don't hear that.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing, me and a couple of a handful of guys on Twitter are always kind of mocking that whole grow the game thing. That because when MLS says it, grow the game actually means grow the league. You know, the game itself is fine.
By game, they mean MLS.
Exactly. They mean the professional league of MLS. And that's the thing that really constantly irks me about MLS and the MLS bots. And again, I know we use that term a lot, but, you know, we're talking, you know, the water carriers for the MLS. Not everybody who likes MLS is a bot. So let's just get that out the way, too. But that's this idea that MLS is somehow like the standard that U.S. soccer is supposed to strive to all across, you know, the country through, you know, from top level to bottom level, you know, of the sport in this country is what infuriates, you know, us and you know, some of our friends on Twitter, because it's, like I said, people mistake when MLS is promoting the game of soccer, they're actually promoting the league and the league only.
That is very true. And then again, you talk and I have these brilliant points, but my mind is so tired, and I'm now at altitude.
You're lightheaded with the altitude change.
Yeah, I know. It's killing me, but I had a brilliant point, but I don't remember. Oh, no. My point was this. If a star American player goes over to Europe, just one, just think all the good Dempsey did. Of raising the awareness of the American game just at a small club like Fulham. Now just think if you could get an American player to get their foot and actually become, you know, like a, maybe not a legend, but, you know, a very popular player for a stretch of 5 to 8 years at a big European club. That is going to do, in my opinion, just as much for U.S. soccer as the MLS does. Now that's my opinion, but I think that you could make that argument pretty succinctly and clearly. It just hasn't happened because, as we said, our players are, you know, Donovan had his chance. He came back. Dempsey had a good run. I don't mind him coming back so much, but Bradley to come back is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, because Bradley was on the cusp of possibly playing in the Champions League. Now, granted, I think Bradley left because he knew he was going to get replaced by I forgot who Roma signed that at the time.
The Belgian guy.
Yeah, Nainggolan or whatever his name is. Mm-hmm. So he was probably going to get less and less playing time as the season went on. So I can kind of understand his move, but the thing that kind of I thought was kind of odd at the time was that he signed such a long deal, which basically locks him in, you know, locks him into MLS for the rest of his, the prime of his career.
Oh, I just remembered my main point, and I think we'll make this the wrap-up of our conversation. Garber's comments were so ridiculous. Just think about this, folks, now. Grant Wall. Yes, Grant Wall said, wow, I can't believe he said that. That's how ridiculous it was. Grant Wall, who, you know, the MLS could drop a nuclear bomb on somebody, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, that's whatever. You know, it's good for the league, yeah.
That's a sign of the MLS's strength.
I don't know where I came. That was a bad, bad reference.
Well, you know.
It's the first thing that popped in my mind because I'm a violent person by nature.
Well, you know, they're dropping it on Jurgen Klinsmann, so everybody's probably going to clap anyway, you know. Oh, take that, Euro snob.
There we go. I have no idea when we started this. I don't know how long of a rant that was for us. It's not a rant. I thought it was a good conversation.
Well, yeah, because I think this is an issue that, you know, I think we're allowed to go over a little because – as somebody succinctly, you know, all the joke tweets that were going around, the best tweet I saw, the guy said something to the effect of, let's be honest, Klinsmann was hired so we can have this conversation.
Yes. Ding, 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 ding.
Yes, because again, people forget that Klinsmann, and as we've stated on multiple occasions in the past, Klinsmann wasn't hired just for results, which obviously he was. But he was also hired to change the paradigm in the U.S. soccer culture. So, like I said, I forgot the guy's name, and I meant to write it down. But kudos to you, smart guy, who tweeted, let's be honest, this is you know, this is why Klinsmann was hired, so we can have this awkward conversation.
Well, you've narrowed that down to one of millions of Twitter users.
Yeah, well, I retweeted them.
Okay. actually, and then I have one more point that popped in my head that I wanted to talk about. Now, Garber could be playing a pretty dangerous game here that could be pretty have a backfiring effect. Now, he talked about how he talked to Sunil, and him and Sunil are good friends, which I don't doubt. And, you know, Sunil is just as much of an empty suit as Garber is. I've made that clear in my blogs. A lot of people argue against that. I know Sunil Gulati started his way up from, you know, like washing jerseys, being the head of U.S. soccer. But still, he's an economics professor. He doesn't know anything about soccer. And I think we should have soccer people making soccer decisions. But anyway, I think they're playing a dangerous game, because if they continue to press on this, and if Gulati, I don't know what Gulati's going to do now. Gulati tries to put some pressure on Klinsmann, saying, hey, you need to be quiet, not say these things anymore. Now, you and I know how much of a kindred spirit Klinsmann is. If that happens, Klinsmann will quit.
Yeah, and when the results don't improve, what's going to be the excuse then? Oh, well, Klinsmann somehow messed up the entire system, blah, blah, blah.
So, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, but if Gulati does press Klinsmann and say, hey, you can't say stuff like that anymore, Klinsmann's not going to put up with that, and he will quit. And then what are you going to be stuck with? Hiring some, you know, what, Peter Vermes, which wouldn't be bad, I guess, but I don't know, you're going to hire some MLS coach to come take over?
Well, yeah, they're going to have to, because as another guy astutely tweeted, it's like, if foreign managers, you know, that have been around soccer all their life are watching this press conference, who the hell in their right mind would want to come over here now?
Exactly. And that is another excellent point. So, hey, good job, Garber. You've basically put a, you know, you've heard of the glass ceiling in business. Well, Garber just put on a lead or a Kevlar ceiling on U.S. soccer. Hey, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be all American, but you know, quarterfinals will be the ceiling. Woohoo! If that,
exactly. Oh boy. Well, all right. Well, you know, by now, if you're still listening, you're one of the true believers, and not only U.S. soccer.
Or you're your Klinsmann. How's it going, Jürgen?
Two Deaf Yanks. Yes. Yeah. V. Gates, Jürgen. Oh boy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm glad that's over, but that was good, you know. We needed to have this talk. And thank you, Garber, for being such a psychopath.
Yeah, because at this rate, you know, I'm always joking around about it, but, you know, I might actually try and force this Acadian national team. Or, hey, maybe I'll just jump ship to the French national team.
Whoa. That's drastic.
Yeah, well, you know. That's the beauty of being, you know, ethnic or having ethnic yeah. stuff, you know. Exactly. Screw this, right. You know. Screw this. I'm going to cheer for the French.
All right, let's hit on this quickly here. European qualifying has been going on, and it seems like they've stretched this out so far, you know, with games like every day. And I understand why they're doing it for TV purposes, but it puts a lot of stress on the clubs. And I know you're upset with international football right now, but let's talk about this European qualifying. And some of the upsets we've seen, and then some of the coverage, the European media. Now, this is not a full list, but this is what you may remember a couple more. But here's what's happened in the past, you know, week and a half. And then I got some from September that I forgot about. So Iceland beat the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Gylfi Sigurdsson, former Spur. Swansea player right now, doing very well for his club and his country. Leading them over the Netherlands. Slovakia beat Spain. Poland beat Germany. And then Germany drew Ireland.
Yeah.
So you got the defending World Cup champions. Can't even beat Poland or Ireland.
Yeah, I was saying the world's gone mad in the last month, you know. Two Mississippi teams sit at the top of the college football polls. Yeah. For
and then here's another one I missed. Northern Ireland beat Greece?
Yeah.
What? Holy mackerel. And then these were from September, but Albania beat Portugal. And then Cyprus beat Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Yeah, and Gibraltar only got beat 7-0 by somebody.
So, I mean, those are a lot of upsets. But when you listen to the European media, and mainly the English media, they're complaining about the format, you know, the expanded 32-team field, which, you know, in the past, they used to have, you know, what, the top two from each group got in, or is, no, it was the first place got in automatically, right? And then second place went into a playoff.
Well, yeah, it was split. Like, all the group winners qualified, and then, like, half the second place got in.
But now it's the top two automatically get in, and then the third place team enters the playoff. Because they've added more teams, these lower quality nations, in quotes. And they're saying that these lower quality nations make it's not exciting for us. We're not playing the best teams. It's boring, blah, blah, blah. But then you see, hey, look, there's been a pretty fair number of upsets. So this gets us back into our talk of the summer of 2013, Corey, and Tahiti.
Yeah.
So now, why are all these people criticizing these nations? Now, some of these smaller nations are winning these games against these bigger nations. And so the question is, we are proponent of for these smaller nations to get better and to improve in the soccer world, they need to be able to have these opportunities to play these teams. And not only are they playing them, but they're beating them. So why is this so upsetting to the European media?
Well, from a joke standpoint, it's probably because they now have to do actual research on other countries that they don't want to do.
Yeah, that is true.
Because everybody's freaking lazy these days.
Well, in England especially, they don't know anything about anything.
Yeah, I mean, they don't even research their own, you know, their own league's teams, much less, you know, players that play in Cyprus, for Christ's sake. You know, even though they're sitting at an internet, you know, at the internet all day, heaven forbid they actually search, you know, for stuff outside their country. So I don't know if that's an actual reason, but
oh, it is. Yeah.
Watching the way they talk about other countries and, like I said, how they can't even get players right in their own league. That's what I take away from that is that they, oh, wait, you might not actually have to start being a journalist again and I can't just write about my own opinions anymore.
Yeah, so it's an interesting thing to see these upsets. And so, you know, the UEFA took a lot of flack for opening the process up, but right now when you look at the standings, and I know we're early because this is a way drawn-out process now, but I do have the current table up, or I did. Dana, what happened to it? Well, actually, I lost it. Oh, no, I have it up. So, you know, so every team is playing 10 games to qualify, so we're only three matches in, but right now Group A has Iceland and the Czech Republic in the driver's seat, with the Netherlands at 3 points. Ireland and the Czech Republic are both on 9 points. So the Netherlands are in some trouble with Latvia, Kazakhstan, and Turkey in that group. And Group B, Wales and Israel top the group with Belgium and Bosnia behind them. That's pretty crazy. Group C, Slovakia tops the table at 9 points over Spain, Ukraine, and the rest of that group is terrible. It's Macedonia, Belarus, Luxembourg. Group D, Poland tops it, along with the Republic of Ireland and then Scotland, all above Germany. That's nuts. So England tops their group, but their group is pretty pathetic as well. It's Slovenia, Lithuania, Switzerland, kind of disappointing so far. They've lost two matches. Mm-hmm. Estonia, San Marino. It's a terrible group. But, you know, some of these teams are getting results. So as we said, to be consistent, in our opinion, people were bashing Tahiti. Well, if these smaller nations are to get better, which I think should be the goal of everyone, because don't you want competitive soccer? I do.
Well, yeah, because that's the other ridiculous point to the argument about, well, why should we have to play these smaller countries? They're not any good. Well, when they play more competitive matches and they start getting better, well, then you'll have your more competitive matches, you dumbass.
Yeah, here's another one. Group F, Northern Ireland and Romania are in the top two spots.
Yeah.
Finland, Hungary, Greece, and the Faroe Islands. And then you got Group G, Austria and Russia. Sweden are all in the mix. And then Group H, you got Croatia and Italy right now. That group's going to look. And then Group I, Albania is in first place, above Portugal. Albania.
Yeah. So the Illyrians. Just wait until Catalonia gets their independence.
Yeah, I know. It's going to happen. So there you go. So it's interesting, and a lot of people in Europe are thinking, and it may, some of the games, I understand, they're not going to be as high quality as you're used to watching your domestic league. But if the goal, I think UEFA, you know. And another thing I'll say is, hey, people who are criticizing, welcome to CONCACAF, because that's how it is here, you know. We don't skip to the very end and play the best teams. No, we got to fight our way to the hex through two qualifying groups.
Well, and the other dirty little secret about international football that a lot of people, especially the journalists, don't like to mention, the quality of football is actually always less than Champions League or, you know, higher league club football. But again, most journalists are never going to admit that because it's, you know, there's this ideal that they're the best of the nation, so they must be a better team when, like I said, in reality, it's actually the quality of international football is usually, you know, not far less, but it's usually, you know, a good bit less than club football.
Good point. So that's all I have to say about that. So it'll be interesting to monitor. I mean, this is a long process now. And
yeah, and even if only one of those countries gets in, it's still going to be an interesting story.
Well, I mean, what, it used to be 16 teams?
Yeah, as of
so it's going to 24,
I think. Yeah.
Right? So, I mean,
hell, I can remember when it was 8.
Yeah, I know, exactly. It used to be 8. So, I mean, this is nothing but a positive. It's going to have some impacts in the future. But in the end, it's going to be good for all the leagues in Europe because the players are going to get to play at a higher level. So if you're not a fan of that, well, then you're just as bad as Garber.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. All right, now let's get back into why this podcast was started. It's to get an American perspective on the Premier League. And that is what drew you, us, and everybody to the game, usually. And so I'll go down through this weekend's fixtures. The international break will be over. We'll have players coming from all around the world. So it will be interesting to see who sits out because you don't know. Because, I mean, you got ridiculous things. Like Argentina was playing Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord. Why should the Argentinian players based in Europe have to travel clear to Hong Kong?
Cha-ching.
And I know you have a lot to talk about that, and I guess maybe we'll save that for the next international break. Maybe we could talk about that because it deserves its own show. But let's just kind of go through the fixture list for the Premier League this weekend, and you can make any comments.
Sure.
And we'll go through all of them, and if we say, you know what, this doesn't interest us at all, we'll say it. We'll be honest.
Yeah.
We'll go in chronological order, not to be biased. Now, this is sad for me because I've moved from the East Coast to the Mountain Time Zone. So Spurs played the early game on Saturday, which means that's a 5:45 in the morning kickoff for me, which is going to be a little bit brutal to get used to. But Spurs are traveling to Manchester City to take on the defending league champions. And I guess the only thing I'll say about this match, Corey, is last year, Tottenham took 0 points off the clubs that were in the top four last year. And the only team thus far that we played who finished in the top four was Arsenal on the road, and we got it was a 1-1 or is it a 2-2 draw?
1-1 draw.
It was 1-1, yeah. Well, I knew it was a draw. 1-1 draw. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Obviously, Manchester City is a pretty tough place to play with the players they have at their disposal. So that is an interesting match just to see how Tottenham will cope, to see if Pochettino will be more pragmatic than some of his predecessors. Do you have anything to add on that match?
I might actually get up for this because, yeah, it's an interesting matchup because, I think Pochettino's done okay so far, but the couple games I've seen y'all play, y'all have been fairly I guess, underwhelming. But, you know, y'all do have a – yeah, I guess what I'm trying to say is, you know, y'all have a good bit of talent, but as a team, y'all haven't looked very good so far. So I'm kind of wondering with the international break if maybe Pochettino's kind of worked on some of that. And, you know, like you said, maybe he's going to come out and be fairly pragmatic on the road. I mean, I do expect City to win, but yeah, I'm probably going to get up, which is 3:45 for me.
Yeah.
but I'm probably going to get up and try and watch this match anyway because of that. So.
Okay. Then next up in the next round of kickoffs, Newcastle United will be hosting Leicester. So I guess the party watch will be on again at home. You would hope that they'd be able to beat Leicester. But I don't know. Leicester, you know, is playing some good football.
Yeah, so Leicester's been pretty tough so far.
So maybe this could be Pardew's last match. So keep an eye on that. Then we have Burnley versus West Ham.
Skip it.
Oh, maybe. But Burnley did.
Well, no, I'm saying I'm skipping it.
Yeah, they scored a couple goals in their last match. And, you know, we talked about that in one of our last couple podcasts about how they may be threatening, you know, the Derby County least amount of goals in a season award. So at home against West Ham, we'll see what they can do.
All right, I take it back. My comment about that game is, will West Ham continue the renaissance of Sam Alona,
yeah.
My God, they're playing football now. It's bizarre.
All right, Crystal Palace will be hosting Chelsea in a London derby.
Come on, you Eagles.
I guess the question is, will Warnock shove Mourinho like Wenger did? Take your bets.
Man, I hope so, because, you know, I don't know, I could get used to that every week. Everybody should just shove him. You know, not like a hard shove, but just like a, yay, what are you doing? Get out of here.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
You know, like they say when you're playing, just let them know you're there.
Yep. Now, here's an interesting matchup. It's Everton, who's kind of struggled this year. They'll be hosting Aston Villa, who's actually played pretty well so far.
Yep.
So that could be very interesting. And then this reminds me, speaking of Aston Villa, the uproar about Roy Keane's book.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, I think I may have to get this book.
Yeah, I mean, like
that's very interesting.
Yeah, like Roy Keane has never done. He apparently hasn't pulled any punches.
Yeah. Whoa.
And I have heard a rumor that there's actually several pages in the book that will actually take swings at you.
Yeah.
It's apparently like some kind of new interactive book.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting.
Be on the lookout if you get it. That's all I'm saying.
I know Aston Villa's been playing fairly well of late. I mean, they kind of crashed in the table. They were in the top three or four, you know, for the first couple games. They've lost their last three matches, though, so we'll see if they could rebound against Everton, who hasn't done as well as people were predicting them. It's early yet, mind you. Next up, Southampton will be hosting Sunderland and Golzi Nalo. Golzi Altidore, coming off a U.S. men's national team goal, but he probably still won't play because they hate him at Sunderland. He's looking for a move. But Southampton finds himself in third place on 13 points, and they're at home against Sunderland. So you would think that Southampton, they have some internationals, but not a lot of internationals like, you know, some of the bigger clubs do. So you would think at home they'd be able to hold serve.
Well, they have the freshly capped Graziano Pelle.
Oh, he got capped?
Yes, he got capped and scored a goal this past week.
See, I missed that. See, I've been really kind of out of the loop. This whole move has really thrown me out. So that's interesting. And I don't know, is he Italian or is he Dutch?
Yeah, no, he got capped by Italy.
He's Italian, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I think he, if I remember correctly, I think he did qualify for the Netherlands, but was one of those, you know, had always kind of said, if Italy comes for me, I'll play for them kind of thing.
Huh. Interesting. All right, next up, to your interest, Arsenal will be hosting Hull and Skinny Leno.
Yeah, Arsenal and our walking band of wounded. We might not play with the right back, and we might only show up with 8 people. I'm not sure.
Jeez.
So with that said, I expect a draw. Whoa.
Well, I don't know. Hull is they're in 11th on 9 points. Arsenal an 8th on 10 points. Early yet still, so. But you would think even with your injuries, you'd have the quality to beat Hull. But, you know, Hull's put some talent together for a club of their stature. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, and if they're able to not collapse like in the FA Cup final, they'll probably beat us 2-0 on set pieces. So.
Yeah. All right, next up, whoa, this is interesting, is QPR versus Liverpool. Liverpool will be traveling to Loftus Road. And the big hubbub there, we won't talk about the game because, you know, Liverpool will probably smash them. Well, maybe not. Yeah, I don't know. Liverpool's still kind of hit and miss. They got a lot of new players. But the rumor, and this is from the London Evening Standard, and they have some pretty good reporters who have a lot of Spurs connections, and they are claiming that the QPR board, because Harry Redknapp is refusing to sign a contract extension, why they'd be offering him a contract extension in the first place. It's bewildering to me, but they're saying because he won't sign one and because of the club's performance so far, which sees them near the bottom of the table, if not at the bottom, let me look. They are on the bottom of the table on 4 points at minus 11 goal difference, that they are going to sack Harry Redknapp and replace him with our favorite, Tim Sherwood.
Yeah, it's replace one knucklehead with another one. That's brilliant.
So the symmetry could be good. AVB got sacked against Liverpool, and Sherwood replaced him. Can Harry lose to Liverpool at home as well and then get replaced by Sherwood?
Yeah, who all three were former Spurs managers. So
I know. There you go, huh? Wow.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they were offering Harry a contract extension because they're like, you know, we still have about $18 million that we would like you to lose. So, you know, come January, you gotta blow all this money, Harry. Sign the contract and put us more in the debt, man.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see. And as I said, for those of you, you know, who follow the English media, the Evening Standard is actually pretty good. And as I said, the two journalists who wrote this article have heavy Spurs connections. And so that means they have heavy connections to Harry, and Harry likes to run his mouth to the media behind the backs of his club. So I believe the story 100%. It could happen.
Yeah, because people forget Harry's daughter is in the media as well. So he's
Yes, as well as his son, of course.
Yeah, he's definitely well connected with the media, and that's partly the reason why he gets so many passes in the media.
Exactly. Even though he's a complete disaster of a manager, more often than not.
And is, you know, almost bankrupted 3 clubs, but you know, yeah. Hey, it's not our money, right?
Yeah, that's right. All right, next up, the last game on Sunday. There's only 2 games on Sunday, so Saturday is heavy. So the QPR-Liverpool game is the early game on Sunday. The late game, which I imagine is on NBC as well, is Stoke hosting Swansea.
I say, I imagine if it's not on NBC, it's got to be on NBCSN.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I will actually probably tune into that one because, you know, as we've talked about before, Swansea is kind of like one of those clubs that doesn't really rub people the wrong way. So, you know, they're kind of, you know, they're not my second club or anything, but, you know, they're one of the clubs that I like to watch play.
You like to watch them because they play good football. You know, they don't spend a lot of money. They're lovable.
Yeah, and they're not really, you know, they don't really get on your nerves because they're, you know, not a bunch of jerks there. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'll probably get up for that one.
There we go. And then on Monday, this is a long game, it will be West Brom hosting Manchester United, which could be interesting. Who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, because, you know, Man U seems to be kind of a Jekyll and Hyde club this year so far. They 2 weeks they look like they might go, you know, fall even further in the mid-table. Then 2 weeks later, they're like, well, maybe they're turning it around. Who knows? So.
I know, we'll definitely see. So that is the Monday game. And I have to – now, we talk often about Manchester United Schadenfreude.
Yes.
But whenever, I mean, these international breaks, they seem like they last for a month. to me in my brain.
Yes,
the inner but world. But I remember after the last game, I think it was the morning show. What is the second morning? It wasn't the morning show. It wasn't the breakfast. It was the second show that has what the heck is their names? Oh, yeah. Jacobs.
What are you talking about?
Jacobs and the other guy. Anyway, they were talking about one of our favorite subjects, Manchester United Schadenfreude.
Ah, yes.
And they were talking about, well, you know, people just like watch Manchester United for the Schadenfreude. And I'm like, yes, you are right.
Yes, it's the jello of sports for me. There's always room for it.
So watch. You know, West Brom at home might be able to get a draw, maybe win. I don't know. Manchester United, they're kind of getting it together with, you know, their new added acquisitions, and they're getting healthier. I think Luke Shaw played in their last match. Is that correct?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. So they're getting healthy. So that's bad news for the rest of the league. But we'll still see, because they do have a lot of inadequacies in the midfield, I do believe. And I think over time that will hurt them.
Yeah, and that's been a glaring deficit of theirs for several years now. And I don't know. There's been some pretty funny theories the last couple weeks I've seen to where like one of the more ridiculous but yet funny was that Ferguson purposefully left the cupboard slightly bare because he didn't want his legacy tarnished for guys who came after him so they would look better than him and stuff. But, you know, I mean, obviously a club of their stature, they have a ton of talent or, you know, a ton of natural talent. It's just, you know, like most team sports, the question is, does the talent turn into a good team? You know, and will they challenge for the title, or, you know, do they battle us for fourth place in Europe, the Champions League qualification, or, you know, do they continue to fall back in the mid-table like last year? So, which is what I hope.
Yeah.
But doubt it's going to happen 2 years in a row.
Yeah, you know? I know.
Mm-hmm.
So there we go. I think that's going to wrap up our conversation for today. Man, I thought that was pretty darn good for being, you know, off for so long.
Yeah, well, you know, we got a lot of stuff happened over the week with the, you know, the Klinsmann, Garber, and there's, you know, all this pent up energy with.
There's so much. I mean, we didn't even get to talk about the Landy Cakes.
Yeah, I was saying, we didn't even get to talk about the ridiculous testimonial garbage.
Yeah, so, but you blogged about it, so that covered it.
Yeah, and for anybody who didn't read the blog, just let me reiterate. It was a freaking joke that I don't care if he's the captain, that a international friendly was turned into a testimonial, which I basically boycotted most of it and watched the last 5 minutes. So
there you go. Yeah. So I didn't watch either match live for the U.S. because I mean, you know, I've been so busy here in old Colorado.
I only watched the last 5 minutes and extra time of the first match, and I didn't watch any yesterday because mainly I forgot about it.
Yeah, so so there we go. So thank you so much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed our blathering about this game. If you don't like what we're saying about Garber, then well, let's please tell us. We would love to talk to you on Twitter at @2DaftYanks, and of course 2DaftYanks.com is your one-stop shop for all things Daft. So, for Corey Chatelain, I am Chad Smith. Enjoy the footy this weekend.
Yes, and if you're an MLS fan, don't forget to drink the Kool-Aid tonight before you go to bed. So,
George Jones says so. Not George, yes. Jim Jones, not George Jones. He's the country
all
scene.
Garber Jones does. All hail the Garber Trot.
Jim Jones, Georgetown, look it up. All right,
bye. All of them, yeah.
This has been the Two Daft Yanks podcast. If you like the show, be sure to find the Yanks at twodaftyanks.com or at @2DaftYanks on Twitter. There, you can stay up to date on all the Two Daft Yanks action by subscribing to the show.